ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam 4th canto, chapter 28, which is called Buranjana Becomes a Woman in His Next Life, and we have text 18. Loka antaram gatavatimai anatha kutumbini vartishyate katham tu esha balakan anushuchati lokantaram gatavati lokantaram gatavati mayanatha kutumbini mayanatha kutumbini vartishyate katham tvesha vartishyate katham tvesha balakan shochati balakan anushochati lokantaram gatavati mayanatha kutumbini vartishyate katham tvesha balakan anushochati. Will exist Katam how to them. Esha, this woman. Balakan, children. Anushochati, lamenting about. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, the Prabhupada. King Kuranjana was anxiously thinking, alas, my wife is encumbered by so many children. When I pass from this body, how will she be able to maintain all these family members? Alas, she will be greatly harassed by thoughts of family maintenance. Purport. All these thoughts of one's wife indicate that the king was overly engrossed with the thoughts of women. Generally, a chaste woman becomes a very obedient wife. This causes a husband to become attached to his wife, and consequently he thinks of his wife very much at the time of death. This is a very dangerous situation, as is evident from the life of King Kuranjan. If one thinks of his wife instead of Krishna at the time of death, he will certainly not return home back to Godhead, but will be forced to accept the body of a woman and thus begin another chapter of material existence. Lokantaram katavati mayana tadchumbini vatishyate katam tesha balakanam shochati. King Kuranjana was anxiously thinking, alas, my wife is encumbered by so many children. When I pass from this body, how will she be able to maintain all these family members? Alas, she will be greatly harassed by thoughts of family maintenance. Om Agyanatmirandrasya Agyananjana Salakya Chakshurunyitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here the Bhagavatam gives a perfect description of the materially conditioned mind. In modern society, we would think there's nothing wrong with thinking of one's family and one's children and taking care of these. And in modern material life, this is considered virtuous. It is even described somewhere in the 12th canto with the prediction of Kali Yuga, that if a man can maintain a family, he is considered very virtuous. So that's quite normal. Like Prabhupada Priya was explaining the other day, that our normal condition, at least most of us as practicing devotees, the normal condition is Maya. Normal condition of the mind is to be in Maya and to be attracted to material things. So even our family, our children, and our beloved wife, they're also material things. Unless, of course, we are staunch devotees who see everything in connection with Krishna, and we see our children as Krishna's parts and parcels, and our wife as Krishna's property. Then it's okay, but materially speaking, our family and our life is no more important than the fly on the wall. The fly on the wall, he also has some family, he also has kids, has his little eggs. And we may think, oh, but we don't give any credence to the existence of the insects and or the dogs and the cats. And we think my life is the most important. But materially speaking, from a material point of view, There's nothing that we do, our education, our life, our car, our house, our progress in life, our work, it is not in any way more significant or more noble or more superior than the life of the insects. And that's what the Vedic version, this Bhakti Yoga process that we have been so mercifully given by Srila Prabhupada, that's what it teaches us, to respect all living entities as we would respect ourselves. Even the ant on the lawn, the dog, the cat. A Vaishnava is prepared to offer respects to all living entities. What does it mean to respect other living entities? It means to afford them the same right to eat, sleep, mate, and defend as we would afford ourselves. Everyone in the material world, they have the same rights of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And it's not that my eating is somehow more important than the dog's eating. My mating is more important. Just because I'm made in a nice bed with a nice mat press, that is somehow more important or more noble than when we see the dogs go out on the lawn. It's not. Every living entity, whatever they are, if it's just about the material life, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, it's all the same importance. And that's what it means to respect other living entities, is to give them the same opportunity and the same rights as we would give ourselves. Now that's in material life. You see, even to live a proper material life, we have to learn from the Vedas. Because otherwise, how will we know how to live? We have all these speculations about how life should go on. But we have to live according to the natural laws. The natural laws according to the three modes of material nature. And to minimize our distress and maximize our happiness in the material world, speaking again just materially, we have to follow the Vedic rules and regulations. But what is the result of this? Even we have a very successful material life and we follow all the rules, the end result is birth and death. Like it says in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, even if you follow all the rules of the Vedas perfectly, the end result is birth and death. So, if we want to elevate ourselves beyond the life of dogs and cats and human beings, whatever, it doesn't matter. If we want to elevate ourselves beyond material life, we have to take to the Vaishnava Bhakti process. And Srila Prabhupada calls this process, as he calls Bhakti Yoga, he calls it a scientific process. He calls it the science of self-realization. So what does it mean, science? What does that mean? It means that we have to investigate and analyze it with our intelligence, very scientifically. And just like we see Puranjana here, he's completely engrossed in his family affairs, so much so that when he leaves his body, and this is quite natural for anyone, oh, what will happen to my wife and kids? What will happen to my dependents? It's quite natural. But this means he's in Maya. Because if we are spiritually realized, we won't have these thoughts, what will happen to this and that when I die? Or anyway, what will happen if I don't have enough money? What will happen if my kids start taking drugs and so on? Then we will see everything as Krishna's arrangement. But how to do this scientifically? Now to understand it scientifically, that's the challenge. of a devotee. So Prabhupada said that we should not accept anything blindly, we should not believe in anything blindly. We have to understand it intelligently, what's happening in the bhakti process. Now sometimes in the material world, they say if a person hears voices in his head, that's like the first symptoms of craziness. You hear voices. Like some guy goes in, into a movie theater and just sprays everyone with bullets and kills like 10 people. And afterwards he says, it was the voice in my head who told me to do it. But we're all in that situation. We're all crazy like that. Because we have this voice, which is the mind, which is constantly babbling in the head, telling us to do this, telling us to do that. The mind is like a voice in the head. Now most people, they don't realize that because they are identified with the mind. But if you understand that you're not the mind, the mind will be like a separate entity and it will have this voice. That's why it's actually very beneficial for a devotee to constantly argue and preach to the mind. Talk with the mind will say this, and then we will go as soul on the basis of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and what we have learned from Prabhupada and the devotees. We will go, no, no, that's not how it is. Like my mind constantly tries to convince me that I'm some kind of great devotee. And I have to go, no, because of this and that, it shows I'm not a great devotee. If I was a great devotee, I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't be thinking like this. So what are you talking about? So it's like a voice in the head. Now, the mind has three levels, mind, intelligence, and false ego. The mind is thinking, feeling, and willing. The intelligence is doubting and distinguishing, and the false ego is making us think we are the body, that we are the mind and the intelligence. So the false ego is the most subtle of these material elements, or the psychic elements. They are also material elements. Krishna says, Bhumira puna lovayo kammano buddhirevacha ankaraityani pinna prakriti rashtara. That these eight elements, they are material. And out of these eight elements, three of them are subtle, psychic elements. Mind, intelligence, and false ego. So, in modern science, they have no conception that these are material elements. They think this is the self. But the real self is the soul. What is the function of the soul? The soul's function is to observe. We observe the thoughts, we observe the feelings, we observe our false ego. I'm thinking I'm the body. So that's what who we really are. We are the observer of all these things. And self-realization means to learn how to observe Krishna. Not just observe ourselves and our own desires and our belongings and our life, but we have to learn how to observe Krishna. Now all these strong emotions that we have in the material world, like Puranjana, he had very, very strong emotions for his wife and his kids, and he thought they would make it without him. He thought they were completely dependent on him. So the bhakti process means we have to take these strong emotions and turn them towards Krishna. Just like we love our children, our wife, our husband, our car, our cat. I mean, I had a cat once. I loved that cat. Still so idiotic, actually. But I was so attached to my cat. So that same love and attachment that we have for other living entities, we have to actually transfer to Krishna. Prabhupada, he said, just it's completely natural that a young boy is attracted to a young girl. And Prabhupada says, that same strong attraction, natural attraction, that's how we have to be attracted to Krishna, in the same way. So initially, at least for most of us, that's not possible, because we come and we have been here probably billions and trillions of lifetimes, being conditioned to mature life, being conditioned to enjoying through a mature body. So it's the bhakti yoga process is very simple. It simply means to chant Hare Krishna, eat prasadam, and serve Krishna. So that's easy. But it's actually very, very hard to purify the mind, to purify the body, and to realize that we are actually, we don't belong in this world, and we belong in back with Krishna. This is not so easy, and that's why we have to approach this in a scientific way. Now, our acharyas, they have given, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana, completely scientifically they describe devotional service, bhakti yoga. Like in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami completely scientifically describes the process, the gradual process of going from being in complete Maya to being completely liberated and free from Maya. And he also, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary says that on this middle platform of the anatta nivritti platform, when we are trying to become free from all the anattas in the heart, all the impurities in the heart, this is the longest step. Yama niyama asana. that's the Ashtanga Yoga. Shravana. What's the next one? Shravana Kirtana, Sadhusanga, Shravana Sadhusanga, Pachana Kriya, Sadhusanga. That's when you get initiated. And then you start practicing. Then Anatta Nivritti. And after Anatta Nivritti, Nishta, that's when you become steady. Then Ashakti, when you start to become attached, Bhava and Prema. So this stage, Anatta Nivritti, when we struggle with our anattas in the heart, that's a very difficult stage. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in one commentary, in his commentaries to the 10th, it can be a very, very long process. It can actually take many lifetimes. Now, Prabhupada gave us the gift of being able to just do it in one lifetime, be over with this material life and go back. But that means we have to be very diligent, and that we have to be very greedy about it. We have to have a very strong desire that I actually want to get out of this material world. Sometimes devotees, they don't have that desire to get out of the material world. They want to stay in the material world and live a nice, pious, religious life, like many other religions. They're not interested in going back and playing with Krishna. Like one religion, the Christians, their concept of liberation is to go back to heaven and be eternally together with your family. I mean, who wants to be together with your family for eternity? This is just so idiotic. Or what about the Muslims? What's their conception of liberation? You know, to have 13 virgins waiting for them. That's their idea of liberation, is to have sex with a virgin. So our process is completely different from that. Our idea of liberation is completely different. Our idea, see, they have no concept of going back and playing and being with God. Either they want to be with some virgin or they want to be with their family. They have no concept that God is a person, and that God, He is playing and enjoying and doing so many wonderful things. They have no concept of that. By the grace of Srila Prabhupada, we have been given that knowledge of Krishna. And that's where we are actually going, back and playing with Krishna. So just like we love our kids, we love our wife, we love this and that, and we love so many things, we can also love Krishna. And we can want to be with Krishna. And this is what we have to gradually, and this is what we are doing as bhaktas, practicing bhaktas, we are gradually becoming more and more purified, and so we love Krishna more and more. In the beginning it's mixed. We still have material desires, but at least we know theoretically I should love Krishna. I may not love Krishna, I may not have any love for Krishna, but we know that's the right thing to do. So we try, and that's why we chant Hare Krishna. See, that's when we, because the mind is this babbling idiot in the head, talking constantly all kinds of nonsense. So that's what we do when we chant our rounds, at least for the 2 hours we chant japa, we don't have to listen to this idiot in the head, this other voice who goes, blah, 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 you're very good, you're very great. And the mind will even go, oh, wow, listen, now you're really listening to the holy name. Look how good you are at listening to the holy name. The mind will never shut up. So at least for when we chant our japa, then we are not listening to the mind. And every time the mind comes and with his voice, some idea, and immediately we push it away and we think, Krishna, Krishna, Rama, Rama. That's what japa is. It's our purification process to not listen to the mind. Because as long as we listen to this mind, as long we'll be contaminated by the material energy. And when we start understanding we're not the mind, and when we start refusing to listen to this mind, but it's not a negative process, not do this, not do that, don't do this, don't do that. That's like the Ashtanga yogis. They try by their own efforts to withdraw the mind and fix it on the self inside. And maybe that could be done in other ages that were more pure and where there was not so much contamination in the atmosphere. But in this Kali Yuga, the only way to actually become free from Maya, become free from the influence of the mind, is the Hare Krishna mantra. It clearly says, in this Kali Yuga, there's no other way. Mahaprabhu says, he says it, and it also says in the Upanishads, Kali Santarano, Santarano Upanishad, Sarva Vedi Chitrishit, Itishitashikam Nam Nam Kali Kalmashanajana, Natta Parataya Upaya, Sarva Vedi Chitrishit. After searching through all the Vedas, we'll find no more sublime process of religion than the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So we have to understand that, and we should know that. It's interesting to know yoga means the same as religion. Yoga means religion. Like religion comes from the word, it comes from Latin, comes from religio. It means to reconnect. Like you probably all know this big company called Lego. You know Lego? It's a world famous company. They make these toys, these little blocks that you stick together and build things like little bricks. Lego. So that we know that word. Lego means I connect. So re-Lego, re-Legio means to reconnect. And yoga also means to connect. So it means the same. Yoga from Sanskrit means to connect. So religion, yoga means the same, to connect. Nowadays they have this propaganda that religion is just some belief that you have, you believe in God. But who cares what you believe in? Whether you believe or not believe in this or that, that's not the important thing. The important thing is what we know about God. And that's what real religion is. is to know about God and know your relationship with God. And this, our Vaishnava religion, is the only religion on the planet that can tell you who God is, what His name is, what He does, where He lives, what He likes, what He doesn't like. Everything we can tell about God. No other religion gives you these answers. At most, what they can say about God is that He is their creator. But what He actually like, Krishna, what He likes to do, He likes the cows, to tend the cows. He likes to have fun with the gopis and His cowherd friends. He likes to steal butter. He likes to steal. Isn't that funny? God likes to steal. And Balaram, he likes to play chess, but he's not very good at it. Can you imagine how funny God actually is? You know, if I was God, I would be the best chess player, and I would just beat everyone. I would beat Morpheus, I would beat, you know, Kasparov, would just wipe them out. But Balaram, he likes to play chess, but he's not very good at it. I think that's so fun. And that also shows God's humility. Krishna is actually very humble. So this is the goal of us devotees, that this is where we want to go. We want to go and become the friends and girlfriends and parents of God. We even want to become God's dog if that's our position in Vrindavan. The devotee prays, let it just even become a piece of grass that Krishna steps on. So that's our goal. It's completely different from other religious processes. And it's very, very scientific. As I was saying, on the Anatana Riddhi platform, we have all these anattas in the heart that we're trying to get rid of. And we are working on it, but as long as we have not reached Nishta, it'll be up and down, Boga Chaga constantly. And that may take some time, but it takes great determination, Utsaha Nishtaya Dharya. We have to be very, very determined, and very, very enthusiastic, and very, very patient. Because if we're not patient, we may become discouraged. You know, after 20, 30 years, we may think, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for 30 years and still I have material desires. What's wrong? And then we think there's something wrong with the process, it doesn't work. But we should know that the only thing wrong is ourselves, is our mind. The mind is still attached. And it can be different from person to person how long it will take before we become purified and liberated. For some persons it may just take because they've been practicing many, many lifetimes before. Or if we just come in the door for the first time having association with devotees, it may take longer time. For some devotees, they may have been associating with devotees for many, many lifetimes before. And they come in, a new bhakta, he comes, and after 1 week he's practically a pure devotee. So that depends on our previous practice and experience with devotees and association with devotees. And we don't know in this present lifetime what we did, who we were. And we're not meant to know. And it's just like before I used to sometimes go to schools and give, because in Denmark they're actually quite liberal. So they invite the Hare Krishnas to come to their school and speak about their religion. So I used to do that. And some kid would always ask, do you know what you were in your last lifetime? And I said, no, I don't know what I was, but I know what I did. Oh, wow, what did you do? I was eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So we know we have been doing this for many, 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 many lifetimes. And that doesn't change. It's the same in every lifetime and in every species. They do exactly the same. They eat, sleep, mate, and defend. But in this modern culture, it's been made into something completely glorious. You know, we eat from silver plates with crystal glasses and silver cutlery. And we sleep in water beds with very, very nice mattresses. And we think it's some kind, we call it advancement of civilization. But Prabhupada explained so many places. I remember when I read it the first time, it was like, wow, finally somebody tells us the truth. He said whether the dog eats from the street or mates in the street, and whether you eat from a nice plate or sleeping in a nice bed, the sleeping, the eating, the mating, the defending is exactly the same. We defend ourselves as human beings with atomic weapons and missiles, and the bird will defend itself with its claws and its beak. And there's nothing more noble or more advanced or more intelligent in that sense about fabricating a missile. It's just the same basic urge to defend. So this is what we have to become free from as devotees. I read one letter from Prabhupada. He said, my whole life I've been praying to Srimati Radharani to become free from eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So that doesn't mean to become free from eating, sleeping, mating, and defending doesn't mean we don't do these things, but it means that we do them in connection with Krishna. Therefore, we eat prasadam, and if we defend, we defend for Krishna, we mate for Krishna, we speak of Krishna. We try to convert all these urges, because they are very, very strong bodily urges. The eating, sleeping, mending, mating, and defending. Very strong urges. Like somebody comes and says, you're an idiot. Immediately the mind flares, you're an idiot. So that very strong urge to defend. But we have to do all these things we have to do in connection with Krishna. And that's the beauty of the bhakti process. That we actually don't want to get rid of Maya in that sense. We want to connect Maya, because Maya is also Krishna. Maya is Krishna's energy. It's like sometimes I argue with people and I just can't understand why can't they get it? It's so logical, it's so simple. That, and Krishna is definitely the best candidate of God, and Bhagavad Gita is the only book in the world where somebody claiming to be God explains in detail about himself and the world and the soul. Why don't they get it? Why can't they understand? But they can, because they admire Krishna's energy. It's actually you're up against Krishna when you argue, you know, philosophy with people. It's Krishna you're up against. It's Krishna's Maya. It's very clever. And it will make people completely convinced of the wrong thing. It's because the soul is completely pure, Satchidananda, full of knowledge and bliss. So how can such a soul think that he's a dog unless Krishna makes him think he's a dog? And that's what Maya does. So we don't want to get rid of Maya, we want to transfer Maya and understand that Maya is also Krishna and connect Maya with Krishna. It says, I remember in the third canto when we had that, there was one by, I think it's Maitreya Muni, who says, you can never get rid of Maya. As long as we're in this world, we are in connection with Maya. Doesn't matter, even a completely pure devotee, he has a body, and he has the same urges and all these things in the body. But we can connect it with Krishna, and that's what we're trying to do as devotees. And the more purified we become as devotees, the more expert we become in connecting things with Krishna. And in the end, we will only think about Krishna, and remember Krishna. That's the goal. Smartavyam satatam Vishnur, Vismarta yoga Nadyatuchi. So always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. I find myself many times, many hours sometimes, I just, all of a sudden I think, wow, it's been like an hour since I last thought of Krishna. But a pure devotee, there will not be a single second when he will forget Krishna. Everything he sees, he will see in connection with Krishna. The grass, the ants, floor, himself, the body, everyone. So just immediately when he sees somebody, he will remember Krishna. Oh, there's a devotee of Krishna. Oh, there's a materialist. He's completely in Maya because of Krishna. Because Krishna helped him to be in Maya. In this way, we have to learn how to always remember Krishna. And this is what the process we are practicing does. Helps us remember Krishna. Thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions?
Yes.
Who's your problem?
In the papers, Prabhupada is saying that something is very dangerous for the man. In the papers.
He was saying what?
A situation that is very dangerous.
Yes.
When a wife is chaste and obedient to the husband. So does it mean that if a wife really loves the husband, he shouldn't be chaste and obedient?
That's a good question. I was thinking of that also, because Prabhupada says it's a danger to have an obedient, faithful wife, because that means you become attached to her. So should the wife be some kind of, the B word, I don't want to say it, who's not chaste and who just gives you a hard time, at least then you will think you will not be attached to her. But positive and negative, naturally, it's the same thing. If you're angry about something, or if you love something, it's the same Maya, and it gives you the same attachment to Maya. So, if you're a devotee, you will see your wife, oh, she's so loving and chaste, because she's a devotee of Krishna. So for a devotee of Krishna, it's different. For a materialist, it's very dangerous, because you become attached to her love and attachment. And that means you will become probably a woman in your next life, because you will think of your wife. But for a devotee, you have to not think in terms of these positive, negative things, which are actually two sides of the same coin. You only have to think in terms of Krishna. And if your wife is nasty, you will think, well, this is Krishna's arrangement to make me more detached. And if your wife is very nice, you will think, oh, such a nice devotee of Krishna, serving me so nicely. Thank you, Krishna. And give all honor and praise to Krishna.
From the purport in this verse, Prabhupada is not talking for the materialist, he's talking for the devotees alone. Verse is for devotees, not for non-devotees. Because he said, if one thinks of his wife instead of Krishna at the time of death, he will certainly not return back home, back to Godhead. Yeah. So he's talking to devotees.
Yeah, but the example is a materialist, like Puranjana is a materialist. He's not a devotee. So he's using a materialist to depict, to make us understand the danger of material life. Because a devotee, it's also a danger of a devotee to become attached to his wife and family and think of them. But that means that he forgets Krishna. A devotee can also forget Krishna. As long as you're not on the Bhava Prema platform, there will always be the possibility of forgetting Krishna and thinking and becoming attached to your wife. So it doesn't matter whether you're materialist or devotee. The danger is the same, but for a devotee, we have the solution. Because we have to be attached to something. You cannot live without attachment. You have to be attached to something. So instead of being attached to your wife and your kids, you become attached to Krishna. And then even if you have a nice wife and nice kids, you will see everything as Christians. Even if you not have a, you don't have a nice wife and nice kids, you will also see that as mercy. You will see everything in terms of Christian and Christian doing this to you, so either teach you something or maybe more attached to me. So that's what we practice at Lodi's, to see everything, whether good or bad, in connection with Christian.
When there is a problem, why do you help me please? What do you see as an opportunity to be a pastor?
Why don't we see that as an opportunity to work
in pastor?
Because we lack Christian consciousness, that's our conditioning, our contamination. That just means we are sufficiently pure. But that's what we practice. And the more we practice, the more pure we will become. And in the end, you will see everything, whether it's good or bad or whatever it is, you will see in terms of Christian. But as long as we are this practicing platform, I mean, I'm not going to reach the platform, as long as we still have an object in the heart, we will sometimes forget and we will become overwhelmed by the true attachments. That's why it's very important to associate with the Lord, because they can tell you, hey, remember Christian. Nobody else will say that. Only Christian devotees, they will say that. Remember Christian. So it's very good. Kijanagar.
So my question is Balaram really bad at chess, or is he just pretending he's bad at chess? I want to know, is he really bad at chess in truth, or is he just playing or pretending he's bad at chess?
See, that's the funny thing. I've been thinking the same thing, like when Balaram describes in the Mahabharata that his eyes were always rolling around in his head from intoxication. So why does Balaram drink wine and get stoned and drunk? Is it because he feels like it? So I have no reference from the scriptures, but I think whatever God does, whether he does it as Krishna or Balaram, he does it to show a point, and he does it because he feels like it. So Balaram feels like he doesn't need to show his superiority by being very good at chess. Because on the other hand, one time he was beating Rukmi at chess, and Rukmi kept saying, no, no, I won, I won. And he just smashed him with his club. So you could say, well, if Balaram is not so good at chess, why did he beat Rukmi at chess? But sometimes Balaram just does completely what he feels like, and I guess he also wants to make the point that even though I'm God, I can be bad at something. That's my prerogative. Because usually you would think God is the best at everything. So he does that to, I guess, to show a point. Show us a point. And he's funny. Balaram is very funny.